walking towards the set, and here comes Shannon, and there goes Elizabeth, and there goes Holly. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm fucking stoned.
What's really exciting about this episode is that it's Dale's slash Leo's first episode, and he's all over it, by the way.
Literally all over it.
You're like this entire episode.
This is the House of Hallowell, episode 7, The Fourth Sister. It is,
Fourth, seventh. I've lost count.
Fourth. It aired on November 18th, 1998, directed by Gil Adler. And this is, as we just kind of touched on, this is Brian's first official full episode. And boy, it's bud, we have
debut.
Questions and notes.
I have notes.
You have notes on yourself?
I don't know how you guys brought me back. Honestly.
Really?
You know, it was a discussion between all of us, and we thought about it for a while. And we're like, God, he's really likable, and he looks damn good in those Levi's. And yeah.
Best glutes in the land.
Oh my God, that's right. There was some real... Well, okay, let's go back. Holly, you had a really great question. So first and foremost, one of the things that I guess I didn't know either was, so you originally auditioned for Andy?
Yeah. I guess before the show even really got going. Which, you know, for me at that era, I mean, look how I look. There was no way I could have played a detective at that age. You know, I could finally start.
You did look kind of young.
Little bit. You know, and TW was perfect for it. So when I did go back for Leo, you know, it was like, oh, great. Oh, what's this guy? And, you know, it was like, you know, something much more attainable. I was actually doing construction at the time. So, you know.
Like in real life?
In real life. The day I got the job, I was underneath the house retrofitting and went over to Spelling and, you know, walked in and did it. And I don't know if I should tell that story, but it was...
No, 100%.
We yeah, were, so,
was, that was the
so
follow-up.
The audition,
what was the audition process like?
I went in, came back. 2 hours later, they're like, oh, come back. So I had to call back to work and be like, you know, I can't go back. I got called back. And so I called my guy at the job site, Dave, and he's like, what? And I was like, I know, I was so bummed because, you know, I was making $100 that day. And what was I going to tell my wife? So you better go book this job. And I knew I was going in for Aaron, who I had met, you know, way back, 90210, Melrose, everything. And so I figured, all right, you're going into that big room, the 15 people on one huge couch, and here we go. I kind of planned how I was going to do it. And I was going to walk in and hello, hello, hello. When they introduced Mr. Spelling, I was going to say, hello, Mr. Spelling. It's great to see you again. Hopefully
you
that
rehearsed that.
Prompting
you had
him.
That.
Yeah. Hopefully that okay, prompts okay. him to be like, oh, hey, Brian. So I did this and he goes, he looks down at my resume and picture and he goes, oh, hi, Brian. Nice to meet you. And I was like, in that moment, I was like, nice to meet me? Nice to meet me? You don't remember the auditions I've given you? And I instantly became
the best
so
years of my life.
Pissed off. I pissed off at my life. I wasn't making $100 today where I was at. I was doing construction. I had a baby, a kid, a thing, a career that's not happening. And they're like, are you ready? I go, yeah, I'm ready. Let's go. No questions. I go, no, I don't have any questions. And I read it like angry, like blah, 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 blah. Okay, thanks. And they go, okay, great. I go, anything else? Okay, thanks. And I just walked out.
See, and that's so not like Leo, but yeah. I'll tell you what, it works because jeez. The auditions that I cared about, and don't take this the wrong way, people, that most of the jobs I've done, I really cared about, but the auditions that I didn't care about are the ones that I did really well in and, like, they offered me the job. The ones that I really wanted, like, desperately and earnestly, like, I can do this job well, they were like, thank you. Thank you for coming. Yeah. Thank you, next.
It's wild how often that happens.
It's true.
Like, almost verbatim every single time. When you don't care about it, there's something that's, like, completely freeing and you just let it go and you're like, whatever. And then something happens, it clicks. like, oh God, or maybe like they don't want it.
You know, the weirdest part is I did a take, you know, I had auditioned. This was my third time auditioning that day.
For
same casting director in the room. No. Okay. You finally, at the end of the day, you get to spell.
You make it to the boss.
Yeah.
Got it.
And, you know, I had done this read like, oh, hi, I'm nice and sweet, nice mm-hmm. and sweet. And that got me to the next one. Hi, I'm nice and sweet. And then I get in there and go, wah! And it's like, well, you know, so that's kind of the mystery for me that, you know, I did a take that was so different and not, maybe that's it, not what they were looking for, didn't give up rat's ass. And,
you showed your range.
It's,
How about that? You showed your range.
So when you got the call, was it the same day? Like
same day, but like a half hour. I walked out.
So you're out there and you're pissed. What did you do?
On the way home.
Driving angry?
Well, I started to drive angry and called my wife at the time and was like, look, I had this thing and I don't know. And so you didn't finish work today? No, I did. I didn't. Then I, you know, boom, got a page, pulled over. At that time, I had to pull over and use a payphone.
Yep.
And yeah, that was it. Was it just happened like that? So it was nice to be able to call her back and
be like, "By the way,
I'm coming home with a job."
No way.
Yeah.
And had you was this? Now you had discussed prior that this you hadn't been a you weren't a series regular at this point.
Guest.
But had you been?
No, this was just a guest, possible recurring. So I think my first contract was for 2 or 3 episodes. And then they. Later in the season or a few episodes down, they offered me another 6 or 7. I think I did 10 the first season. I'm not sure. So it was like three and like then that. Brought me back.
Give or take a few.
Yeah.
Okay, so now we're on set. And you have two of arguably the most beautiful women on television fighting over your attention. What was that like?
Well, yeah.
Immediately thrown into like the lion's den with them.
It's interesting because I you know I knew Holly and Alyssa at the time and
you had known them already.
I mean we had met. We'd all met because friends of friends.
True, mutual friends.
It was interesting as an actor to play that with people you know that you know are obviously off limits in that way off the set, then to bring that. You know, kind of flirtatiousness onto set. It was, I was nervous. I mean, I'm just nervous to work with the girls anyway and be there and first time on a primetime show like that. And, you know.
You said you were nervous today just to talk about it.
I am.
Why?
Because
I'm on the spot
buddy.
And Danielle Harris has like this resume. It's like, how do you go through all that? And
you're doing great.
Like, man.
Hey, so quick question, BK. What do you remember about your first few days on set after the nerves kind of subsided? Like these scenes where you're interacting now with every single one of them, just again, thrown right into the deep end.
Well, I remember, so I had a garage, lived in Van Nuys, and I'd go out to my garage and it's where I'd run
the That's the valley, everyone.
I'd run lines and have this little putting machine and whatever, and I'd sit out there and have a beer and just literally run lines all night a million different ways. And I kind of knew that being a possible recurring, that, you know, it was a lot of it was up to me and my chemistry. And so I would just rehearse it a million ways. Like if I feed the girls the line this way, is it going to make them, it'll make them react a certain way. So I kind of, you know, it goes against everything I do of just listening and reacting, and I felt like if I could direct the performance, the scene to where I don't leave them a response other than such and such, then, you know, I could kind of help them like me on the show in a way.
Sure.
That was kind of my plan. I'd stay up till 2-3 in the morning doing it, get up, get some coffee, go to work, and just try to be in it. But I remember one of my first, it must have been the first or second episode. I had gotten to set and I was hanging out and, you know, I went like 3 hours early to go to the set. And so I got to the set and it was like, you know, 9 a.m. And I'm like, oh, okay, great. And they're like, look, we've pushed you to the end of the day. And it was Les Sheldon at the time. He's like, look, you're done. You know, come back at, you know, what you want. We're not going to need you to after lunch, which is like, you know, 1 o'clock. And then he's like, end of the day, 4, 5, 6 o'clock. I was like, oh, well, maybe I could pop over to the golf course real quick, right? So I do, and I'm hanging out. And this is awful to say, and don't ever do this at home, kids, but I was kind of nervous, whatever. And I wasn't a big pot smoker at the time, but I did here and there. And I was like, oh, okay, maybe I have time to, you know, take a little hit. So
Your face is incredible.
I do,
right,
and this
now.
Is like at 10 in the morning, right? And I take one hit, and I'm like, dude, what are you doing? Like, I don't work stoned. I don't work dry, never. And I don't know why I'm like, okay, it's a good idea to do this. So I'm like, well, because it has time to wear off, right? And so it goes, and I finally get brought onto the set, and it's like, I don't know, 6 or 7 or 8 o'clock at night. And I sit in my trailer.
Yeah, I was going to say it's probably going to be 9 o'clock.
It was late.
After lunch those days was like 9 o'clock at night.
So I'm thinking, I'm fine, right? I'm totally normal. I've been talking to people. Everything's great. I'm not nervous. There's, you know, I'm not stoned. And then they brought me onto the set, and you come from the outside and you get into the indoors of a set, and it's all of a sudden, it's dark except for where the set and the lights are. And it's kind of like, there it is, right? There's the amphitheater of it. And I remember my heart just start pumping out my chest and walking towards the set, and here comes Shannon, and there goes Elizabeth, and there goes Holly. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm fucking stoned. I stopped right there and I said, okay, no, you're not. Relax. And I'm not a religious person, but I have spoken to the higher powers as it be. And I took a moment there and I said, you know, Brian, you're really trying to screw life up, aren't you? And I said, if they bring me back, I will never, ever, ever.
I will never smoke pot again.
Never smoke pot again.
And
never,
never, they brought me back.
Hey, and you've been pot free ever since.
Well, I'm as I act, yes.
As you act, yes. quick question. Do you remember what scene that was specifically? So if we were watching this episode.
Yeah, now I want to guess. Now I want to go rewatch
I think it was just one scene where
I'm at the...
There's one scene where you look a little wild-eyed.
Maybe,
and I was like,
maybe. I think it's at the...
You're in the hallway.
The fireplace. And I literally, at the end of the day, we wound up just doing one line and I turn around and they're like, Leah, and that's it.
That's your ass day. Wow.
Maybe they knew I was stoned. They're like, get
it. Was
that's
the
your ass shot.
Was the ass shot?
Yeah.
It might have been.
Oh, dude, that's okay. Yeah. You killed that ass shot. Yeah. Who said finest glutes in the city?
In all the land.
In all the land.
I think was Holly said the city and...
Alyssa said, all the land.
All the land.
Wow.
Oh, my God. I think that is that scene. You want to know why?
Oh, no.
You want to know why? And I was going to say this before, but because you tripped over the fireplace screen.
Oh, yeah.
And that was not scripted.
Are you sure? I saw that today, and I'm like,
that
man,
was
I'm
not,
funny. I'm a real Jack Tripper.
We were funny because it happened by accident. And incredible. I was like, oh, be careful. And I was like, antique. Grams. She said antique. I said grams.
Yeah.
Wow.
One way or the other. But literally, that was all ad-libbed because you tripped over the screen because you were stoned.
You were,
I was not.
There's no way. By the way, there's probably
you were. Like I want to pull it up.
3% chance that you were still high if you hit it once at 10 a.m.
Yeah.
And this is like 9 p.m.?
The panic.
You were in your head.
Panic.
It's panic. That's what that was.
I mean, it was panic enough coming onto the set and the girls. And, you know, I'd already popped in the one and that was not much. But, you know, now we're getting into the meat of Leo's story, you know.
Formerly.
Courting the girls as, you know, that whole thing.
Yeah. And by the way, you just like moved in for the whole episode. Like you were just there. Like, first of all, you're putting like flyers up. Like that's not a handyman thing. You're putting flyers up for our lost cat. Like, you've just literally moved in. And at one point, you're, like, in the kitchen looking out the window. And
yeah,
you
Shannon's
pull
home.
Apart
the
Prue's
home.
Yeah. And you're like, Prue's home.
But
and I was
also,
like,
dude, why are you the slowest handyman in the history of the world?
There's a
when did he, like, become
I mean,
Ruby?
I get it. You're playing the long game, for
right.
sure.
Right.
like had to resand it.
Oh yeah, I gotta stain this.
That's
gonna take.
And then you hand her the stain samples. There was a lot of stain samples. I was like, God, what was that? 75 samples?
It's a lot.
It was a lot of samples.
It was more than a few.
Yeah.
So that was Leo's game.
So hey, before we get back into Leo, did anyone like personally from like a Brian to a Holly or Shannon or Alyssa? Yes, you said you knew them, or even Dorian and TW a little bit. Was anyone like, did they welcome you with open arms? Were you kind of, did you feel like you were part of the group, or did you kind
the
of
girls
feel like you were on
definitely
the
girls definitely welcomed me in with open arms. They're like, hey, they knew me as, right. You know, but once I got to the set, and this is what I realized early, is we're in a professional atmosphere, and it's like, all right, great. Brian, glad you're here. Let's go to fucking work. And, you know, that was kind of Shannon driving that, you know, this.
No time for small talk.
We're not messing around.
There was
here, you know?
Zero time
you
for small talk.
Feel the energy of them wanting to make something great, and it's not cool. Playtime.
Well, we had sort of got to the point where we were finding our footing. We'd finally like found a story point where we were like, you know, our writers were super good at getting like, you know, these real life messages that Aaron always wanted sort of shot in to the episodes, but they're like, they're also only 42 minutes long. So there's so much to get in and so much character development. You've got to have had a bad guy and then the good guy's got to win. And in between, you have to have all these people sort of revealing themselves as characters. And that's a lot to do in 42 minutes. So, you know, in the first opening scene, you know, we have this teenager who has a mom who's in rehab, and that it's not something to be ashamed of. And you have that all within like the first couple minutes of the episode.
By the way, I wrote something about that as well. I like that you picked that up. It was teen angst, but it was incredibly insightful in regards to her take on addiction.
Because real life issues that translated to people in a human way, because, you know, once you put the bad contacts in the eyes, we've basically, suspension of disbelief is kind of flying out the window.
Right.
You know, so, and then, you know, we have the bad guy who looks like this dreamy fairy apparition in the mirror, and you're just like, well, that's hard to look at too. So, not, she was a lovely actress. Very
lovely
beautiful.
Actress.
Beautiful.
But it's just like, you know, the special effects were super, like, they just bump you, smack you right in the face and go, huh. Maybe it's just in hindsight, but, like, you know,
well,
maybe
no, actually,
at the time it was more revolutionary.
I thought that the effects weren't as bad, like the...
Oh, yeah, they are. No,
we're coming off of, remember, everyone, we're coming off of just watching A Wedding from Hell.
Yeah.
So anything is better than that. I'm looking at these effects, I'm like, well, that didn't bump me, like, you know.
Well, now what's equally bumping me is that Hikate is in the opening credits of the show, like forever now.
No.
When she turns her head around when she's on top of the guy. Like, who decided that was the great thing to put in the credits? And see, this is why they made me a producer later in life, because I was just already asking
you were there.
Terrible questions.
The only thing that really, really bumped me on the episode was Aunt Jackie and her flailing down the stairs bit.
It was a great fall, though. Stunt person.
It was a great
I mean, like the
fall.
Remember,
stunt
work was fantastic.
That's a girl going down the stairs in a skirt.
I thought it was a slight overreaction to her dress catching on fire.
Well, yeah.
Not at all. When you catch on fire, it's not really your finest moment of decision making.
That's true, but like she somehow went out the door into the hall and then flailed down
the
stairs.
Whoops.
Well, if you're backing up and then lose your footing, and then it just all goes downhill from there.
Fine.
Right.
You're right.
Pun intended.
Great fall, Aunt Jackie. Great fall.
We do need to talk about Aunt Jackie.
We do need. She's letting...
go ahead.
Stranger danger, Aunt Jackie. Prue just shows up and you start like telling her everything, like spilling all the tea, and then say, hey, go to my house. Go to my house. It's fine.
Way before that.
Yeah.
So we would be remiss if not mentioning Rebecca. Rebecca Balding was one of our producers' wives who just passed away recently. And not only was Rebecca a lovely lady, and they were like, you know, the life of the party at any rap party, because all they did was dance the night away, her and James. Conway. But she also somehow morphed from Aunt Jackie into another character on the show later in the series,
where
she became Elise. So Aunt Jackie had a second life for sure.
Yeah.
And lived on. But we do want to say she was a lovely woman, and our condolences go out to Jim and the kids.
That's right. Thank you.
Sending you a lot of love, Jim. You know, another show did that. Milch did that on Deadwood. There was a character, an actor, I forgot the actor's name, but the actor ended up dying in the episode. And then the season premiere the next year, he brought the actor back, but in a completely different character.
Hey. And,
well, that's interesting. It brings me to our guest star, main guest star, that's not Leo, from the show, Danielle Harris. Early in her career, she's played in, four different Halloween movies and two different characters, which is, you know, again, interesting, but kudos to...
I'm into that.
Yeah.
If you're in a play, if you're part of a company...
Right.
You're constantly changing roles, and you're part of a theater troupe. It's like, oh, tonight I'm Macbeth, and tomorrow night I'm Lady Macbeth. It's just how we roll.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, maybe not. Maybe Macbeth wasn't the best. Maybe one night I'm Macbeth, and the next I'm Macduff. Shakespeare fans, anyone? No.
Anyone?
Going once, going twice.
Bueller.
Okay. Let's just move on.
Did you guys like the episode?
I did.
Feel like it's a fledgling episode. It's a fledgling,
what do you mean by that?
Episode. It's like we're sort of getting it, but we're not quite there yet. And I know in these days, I know exactly what happened to your call time, Brian, because literally we were just with the effects. And, you know, and to Danielle's credit and the rest of us, it's super hard to act out things that you can't see and you can't imagine, because they don't even know what the special effect is going to look like until it's basically finished in those days. So, a director can tell you to imagine what your hands are doing when you hold it up, but it's just an added element to being believable that's super hard to do.
Yeah.
So it was a struggle. And credit to anybody who was fully committed to sell it, because it's hard.
Now at the end of the episode, Danielle's, the fourth sister, and she, life gets back together, and she says she's going to keep her promise forever. Don't worry, Phoebe. She promised to Phoebe to keep the secret. It left me with a moment there, was there thought of bringing her back and having her come in and out at all? They kind of left that open with that line there.
Possibly. I don't know, but you'd have to ask her. I have a feeling.
You'd have to ask her for sure.
Yeah, I have a feeling that she got too busy.
Yeah.
Definitely. Definitely, for sure.
Was there, before we get to her, was there just, while we're kind of on the, just touching different pieces of the episode, was there anything else that either jumped at you? Brian, did you have any idea where Leo's story was going to go? Do we need to talk about...
Well, it definitely wasn't going to go to Mom Piper. That was so rude, Mom. Just think of her as your mom. I know I do. So wrong.
But that's what Leo was looking for. They didn't know.
Oh, the mother figure.
You and Alyssa were playing real dirty. That whole milk thing where she's so aggressive.
First
wiping
of all,
your milk stash.
That was aggressive.
That was. Yeah, did you see all shades of red in that moment?
Apparently. But, you know.
Well, no, Holly. Let's get back to this. I want
Piper
you to
really
close your eyes and remember being there in the moment.
Piper was really underestimated in this episode, and I got offended for her.
Good.
Thank
Good.
You.
I was offended. I was that
was
is
offended.
Blatant.
There's literally the other Callie person says, don't worry about Piper, she won't try to stop you. And I was like, oh, rude.
I know.
So
they,
very
they
rude.
Pegged you a certain way, girl.
Yeah, but I'm the one that was the night watchman that stopped the bad guy from killing the good guy. So
the bathroom. Yeah, the bathroom moment in the
Thank
hall.
Thank you very much.
I kind of I had a note on Andy. You know, I've been riding Andy pretty hard and his stalkery clinginess.
Yeah.
And I'm like, your clinginess is caught up to you, man. You know,
no.
Prue's an independent lady.
Andy is pissed off.
Yeah, he's pissed, but you know what?
Were you surprised when he said at the end to Prue, I still love you?
Well, that was,
well,
I was more surprised that he threw
forever.
His sport jacket
into a bush. I mean, they're dating. Had he even gotten to that point in their relationship? He's like,
maybe the previous time. No, no, it was the previous time.
Really?
He was inferring. Yeah. Like they were, they probably said it before. Also, when did you stop becoming a chef? Like one moment you're a chef and then next you're like, oh, I used to be the chef here, but now I just run this place.
So I think we got a note from Spelling that the chef outfit wasn't as cute as the hostess outfit. And that's how that decision was made.
So what did you end up doing with that red sash?
Burned it.
Didn't it come home and show up in the kitchen at home?
Burned it.
Yeah, you're still wearing that when you're cooking, aren't you?
When it's just never hyper in the
when you're like role playing.
When I go to cooking school in France, it'll come with me.
Okay.
I enjoyed the storyline. And, you know, maybe
for nostalgic reasons.
Well, of course you enjoyed it. They're fighting over
Aviva
you.
Aviva and that whole thing that she went through and, you know, where she was in her life and what she was willing to do to find happiness and
find a family. You know,
that she had to do this to even, you know, she wanted to be friends with the Charmed Ones, but this was the only way she was going to get that. And, you know, what she kind of had to go through. And she did feel like she was taken advantage of, but yet misunderstood. And I like, you know, where that came out. And that's why at the end, I thought, you know, there was a potential that, and we'll ask Danielle when she gets in here, but they bring her back. Let's welcome the fourth sister of Aviva from this episode, Danielle Harris.
There she is.
Ah. Hello.
Hey, what's happening?
Hello, guys. How you doing?
How are you?
Good. You know, we're trudging along. We're new at this podcast thing, so, you know.
Listen, we've been doing it for over a year, and I still can't figure it out sometimes, so.
We have technical difficulties a lot, and sometimes just spiritual ones.
Oh, shit.
We're fine.
You guys do a great job on there. The one you sent me.
And, oh, thank you.
A couple more. The energy and everything that you bring on there is.
Oh my God, we have no.
What you talk about? Oh,
I know.
You have to tell people what it is.
I know.
It's pretty awesome.
BK, yeah,
BK got really excited about your podcast.
It's you know, no hold bar.
BK's never listened to a podcast before, and now he's like deep dive into yours.
Right.
Of course.
It's so naughty.
Of course, because we don't want to talk about charms, so we're like. Danielle, tell me about your podcast.
It's RRR rated.
Is it really? It's called Talk Scary to Me, right?
Talk Scary to Me, yes. It's
you and Scout.
Yeah, so it's Scout and I just shooting the shit. And because I'm like a decade older than her, we've got like both perspectives. And we have fans write in quite like sex and love questions. Because there's only so much horror that you can talk about.
Right.
So we do sex and love questions. And then we do, which you'd be surprised when people want to know about stuff from us.
Oh, boy.
Like in our little horror community, maybe there's not like access to information. So we're teaching a lot of men and some women about things that maybe they should already know. And then we do our true crime stuff. And, you know, Scout's all about TikTok. So she does her 911 calls and about, you know, people killing their kids. And it's just a little bit of everything.
Wow. What's the wildest question you've ever fielded on the show?
Ooh, people want to know if there's role play in our relationships with killer, with like Matt, like Michael Myers masks and stuff like that. I mean, that's like a very, we get that all the time. There's a lot of feet questions. It's a lot of like, a lot of
wait,
like,
I looked it up briefly and I got stuck on one concept that was the lost condom. And I was no.
Oh, that was early on too. How do you get out of how do you,
we've all been there,
someone
right?
ever lost? Have you, Holly, ever had anyone lose a condom inside of you?
No. Uh-oh. What do you mean we've all been there, Drew?
That has happened once or twice.
The question is, whose responsibility is it to get it out?
It's the dude.
Oh, the guys.
Yeah.
Like if the girl's okay with it and the guy, go get it.
Well, you put it in there. You might as well get it out.
Yeah, right? Like, I'll go get it. It's fine.
It's your fault.
It's my fault. Hey, but again, at least I'm wearing one. Like, there can be...
Was.
Like, let's not criticize. Yeah. Was wearing one.
Or actually, someone told me, told us a funny story about how they missed the mark and they gave conjunctivitis to their girlfriend.
Oof.
And she got him in the eye. He got her in the eye.
That's not okay.
Yeah.
That's
and then Scout.
Flag
Scout,
on the play.
Scout said flag on the play, happened man. To her. Scout said it happened to her, I guess, but did not get conjunctivitis. So what's your
And if anybody doesn't know Scout, she was actually on Charm too.
Yes, she was.
Yeah. So she's going to come up, hopefully, in her episode, too.
Yeah. She was a baby. Yeah. She was young, wasn't she?
She was teeny tiny. Yeah. And we actually, we ran into each other at a convention. She came up to my table and she was like, I just want you to know, it was such a great experience for me. And I remember you guys being really kind. And I was really, I was like, you were a baby.
She was a baby.
She was a baby, baby.
You know, so a funny story. I don't know if you know this, but I was in the middle of shooting a feature at the time that I did your episode. And I was working nights. So the entire shoot, I went from days on Charmed directly to night shoots on a movie I did with Cora Nemec and David Faustino, actually. Wow. So I didn't sleep for like a week. And I will never, ever, ever do that ever.
Do that again.
Do you remember with were you aware of Charmed when you got it? Like,
I mean, that's why I went on audition for it. It was like, okay. Is this the fourth or fifth? It was the first season, fourth or fifth episode, maybe. I don't know. I know it was in the very beginning and it
ended up being seven, but it's because we rearranged things. So you're probably right that it was four or five.
Maybe they had aired four of them already. So I knew that it was
aware of the show.
Giant hit. And that's why I was like, well, I'm willing to still do it and not sleep for a week because it was such an important show at the time. And, you know, here's the funny thing. So I went and auditioned, got the job, and then I went to set to do like a hair and makeup test. And they wanted to dye my hair bright red.
Ooh.
And I was like, I'm in the middle of shooting a movie. I can't. And then they were going to recast me.
And ridiculous.
I know. And they were like, well, you guys look too much alike, all of you.
Oh, which I thought was intentional. I thought
it's called the fourth sister.
Sister.
Right? Yeah. Okay. So, but that's a spelling thing too. Oh. And so he really didn't want anybody to have, and your hair was really similar. And that was like a rule. Nobody has the same hair because he thinks that it like makes an individual more identifiable it was a spelling thing, not a you thing.
So,
and also if it was red, that was not goth at the time. That would have been more punk rock. So that would be wrong.
That's why they like slicked it back and kind of tried to do things to make it look different than you guys.
Right.
But I was like, oh my God, great. Here we go. Now, like what you guys, there was so many like blondes and redheads and like other people that were there. You hired someone that looked just like you guys and then you wanted to change it. So it was crazy.
I really thought that was intentional. Like when I'm watching you guys kind of run around together, I'm like, oh, this could be the fourth sister.
Yeah.
Was there, and this is actually came up before you came on, we were talking about, was there ever an intention, like had they discussed with you a potential of bringing you back?
No.
Because you were,
no.
She was too busy, I told you.
Very busy.
Did you think about it?
Nobody said anything.
At the end of the script, though, when you're like, I'll keep my promise, and that it kind of left it open for you to come back. Did you see that?
You know what? It never crossed my mind.
Mm.
I remember getting flowers, actually, because I had to wear giant contacts when I become Aviva.
Aren't those awful?
They're awful. Yeah, I didn't know, and mix that with not sleeping for a week. And I was like, that was just crazy. So I got flowers from spelling, essentially saying, you know, thanks so much for being a trooper and you did a great job, blah, blah, blah. So that was really nice. I'd never experienced that before. It's a lot. I mean, I haven't seen the episode in a while, but I had a lot to do as a guest star. Like they gave me a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm glad I was younger at the time. And
you were fantastic. It struck me how, you know, yes, you're troubled character and angry and angst and all this, but you know, towards the middle of the episode, you really saw the hurt and the pain your character was going through, and you know, you kind of brought that out. And yeah, you had all these motives, but I feel like the range you showed in there was, and I don't know if that was a script or just you being you and what you added to it, but you know, there was a vulnerability to your character. That, you know, I'm not the tough girl anymore.
I was so tired. I don't remember what was going on.
That was
so
great.
The tired like just gave you that glazed, angry, painful look on your face.
Exactly, I was delirious. Thanks, Brian. Though that's very sweet. I appreciate that.
And I had a question. So when you did the eyes and you became her and you had their demon voice, did you have to do a demon voice on the set?
I hope we didn't make you do that. No.
No, I think that was added.
A little reverb added at the end.
Yeah, that was added. I don't think I did anything weird like that.
That would have been something.
They had more. They had money for post, you know, unlike other horror movies that I do or have to do those weird, you know, like ours, Brian.
That's right. So you guys worked together after Charmed.
Yeah. Yeah, we did. And freezing. Where were we, in Michigan or something?
Niles, Ohio, Michigan. Or? Yeah.
Niles, Michigan. Freezing. Yeah. Freezing. Mm. Almost died. I remember, were you in the car with us when Lance took, like, had the PA get out of the car and Lance Henriksen drove the car for us to the hotel from the airport because the PA was all over the road. We thought we were going to die.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Wow.
Like, blizzard, snowing, falling asleep, like a 20-year-old driving us. And Lance was like, pull over. I'm going to drive. And he drove like 3 hours. So we didn't die on the way to the hotel.
Wow.
That's brilliant. You need a guy like that on every set.
I know. Love Lance Henriksen.
Now, you've been working since the 80s, which is incredible, amazing. Started as a child. And then you were on Guiding Light for a couple years as a
One
a
Life
child.
To Live, close.
One Life to Live, excuse me.
One Life to Live, yep.
And then from there, you went to the big Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
And you did two, I guess, a couple years apart. When they brought you back, when Rob Zombie brought you back years and years later. You auditioned for it. You're playing a different character. How mm-hmm. how does that happen?
There are no rules.
It's true. I'm still trying to come back. I was at a convention and a fan came up to me and said, I heard that they're remaking the original Halloween and that Rob Zombie's doing it and that you're going to be Laurie. And I was like, that would be weird because essentially I played Laurie's daughter in the old ones, you know. So I still managed to find a way to get in and audition and sort of fought for it because Rob didn't want anybody from any of the other Halloweens. I'm sure everybody was trying to get in some way and mm-hmm. do something in it. And so I just auditioned like everybody else. Like
wow.
It was so weird to go to the casting and like sign in and see people that were also auditioning for because I had such a history with the franchise. And I went in and also, you know, there was nudity in it. So it was like a opportunity for me to use sort of the same film that was keeping me as a child in everyone's mm-hmm. head to finally see me as an adult. So it was sort of, it was interesting how that was sort of serendipitous, how that worked out.
That's a huge transition, and it's not easy to make. And sometimes you just have to completely crush how people saw you before to take you seriously as a grown-up actor. Because we all have friends that didn't make that transition.
Oh,
very well.
Yeah. Lots of friends. Yeah, for sure.
And you and Scout did just fine.
Yeah. Thank God. We're still trucking along.
What are you working on right now?
What am I doing right now? I'm supposed to be doing a movie with Dee Snider, but it's like, you know, it's one of those, like, is it going to happen? I don't believe it until I'm on an airplane kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then I've got a bunch of movies I did during quarantine and last year that have just not found their way out yet. But I think the one I'm most excited about is a movie called Natty Knox. And it was Robert Englund and Bill Moseley and myself. And the writer and director directed Halloween 4. So it was a nice reunion. And his name's Dwight H. Little. And he also directed me in Marked for Death. And he did like Free Willy 2. And he just did a bunch of stuff. And he's nice. It was cool to be back on set with him after so many years. Because I didn't remember, you know, and I have kids in it, which is the first time that I've had, you know, teenagers essentially on film, which was lovely to play my age for the first time. And he just kept giggling because he sees like little Jamie. Now he's like, you're Diane and you're a realtor and you're in your 40s. This is crazy. So it was really kind of cool, you know, and then being able to see how he directs other kids, I was able to sort of go back and remember how he was with me as a child. And I hadn't seen that before. So I would ask him, like, how was I in this situation? Or was I easy to direct? Or, you know, because I don't remember that relationship as much. And he said something really cool. Like, he's like, it was kind of like, because it was my first movie, right? So I was 10. So he said, it was kind of like, I would show you a bike for the first time and you'd never seen a bike, never been on a two-wheeler. And in the middle of me telling you what it was, you got on it and you just started riding it. He's like, I didn't really have to teach you or show you the way. You just sort of started to listen. And then you're like, yeah, I got this. And then
that's pretty
just kind
cool.
of did it. So that was really nice to to be able to sort of see that and to play a mom and have that relationship too, which I am a mom and, you know, my life. So it was nice to be able to sort of bring that out on film for the first time.
And they let you be a grown up.
They let me be a grown up and I got to wear a suit. And like, you know, just, I mean, a suit. I mean, I wore a suit in our movie, Brian, but I felt so stupid. I don't know. I always feel dumb, like getting, because it's just not me, like getting dressed up in it, like a pantsuit is just so, I'm like a t-shirt, jeans, heels girl. So I always feel like, I don't know if you guys felt like this too, when you're a kid actor making the transition to an adult and especially being petite. You know, I remember like I would try to get the highest heels to go in and wear the longest pants that were sort of bell-bottomy so they wouldn't know how tiny I was. And I would thank God if it was just on tape because I didn't want them to see me in the room that I was so little. You know, it's like you're 4'11 and I look 10 years younger and I'm trying to play, you know, the DA and they're like, this looks so stupid.
True.
So you just feel dumb. I just always felt like I was playing dress up. Even though I was the right age and of the characters I was auditioning for, if not older than that, I always felt really dumb going into the room. I was like pretending to be a grown up when I already really was a grown up. So it was nice to finally have that and be able to feel like I owned it.
I get to identify with that a lot. I wasn't able to shave or look older. I mean, I was always kind of baby faced in a way. And, you know, they'd send me in for these cops and detectives and things. And I'm like, you know, I know you're not going to hire me and I don't feel right. So I'd go pretend to be the cop.
Right.
You know, and it was always that.
Was that your cop face?
That was one of them.
That was his, okay. That was his cop voice too.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, the funny thing is that you could very well be a cop, you know, with a baby face. But it's like what we see on TV is what we believe it should look like, even though they're just actors. So it gets very confusing. Trying to pretend, even though that's essentially what we do for a living.
Yeah, but wanting to feel comfortable and natural, and it is a fine line of being yourself. But I guess I was always afraid if I be myself, I'm going to be too much of a kid.
Right. And didn't they say that they asked for you? They know who you are, Brian. They want to see you. The producers asked for you. That's why you have the audition. You're like, what? You guys know I'm not going to get it. I mean, that's how I always felt. Only once or twice there was this other actress named Danielle Harris that ended up marrying my friend Jensen Ackles. And twice I would get, you know, an audition in my career when she was acting a lot. And I would read it and go, you guys, this is not for me. This can't be this can't be for me. I'm telling you right now, there's a mistake. I'm not going to go. And they're like, no. Again, they called for you. And last time I went in and I walked in and I just saw their face. And I straight up said, you were not expecting me, were you? And they were like, we were looking for the other deal, but you're already here. So, you know, you're good. We love you. Go ahead and read. I'm like, yeah.
Oh, how terrible.
They've been like Dark Danielle Angel Harris. Or it was like something, you know, she's just tall and she's younger than me. She's tall brunette.
5'11", blonde.
Sexy body and, you know, boobies and all that stuff. So
all the things. My favorite is like when you're in a room with producers and they start talking about if you are or are not right for the part. Like this would happen to me with cop shows a lot. And people would go like, well, I don't know. Do you think you could like handcuff someone? I was like right now, like you want me to like demonstrate? And I was like, you know what? I happen to know some people who work on CSI. And the fact of the matter is not even like a 6-foot man can handcuff someone by themselves. Watch cops. It takes like 2 or 3 of them to get somebody down and get their hands behind their backs. This is a technical fact. I was like, so don't worry about me.
I mean, I remember
that's how I responded.
I had like a bunch of callbacks for a Dick Wolf series and he was in there and I kept going back and I can just tell that he was just like, he liked me, but just wasn't sold and didn't know what to do. And I had to like pitch myself. He's like, babe, I just don't know if I buy it. And I was like, how cool would it be if you stick me in a room doing an interrogation with a criminal? Because I can talk circles around them. Like, even though I'm tiny, doesn't mean that I can't win. You have to think of, like, there are many, many, many other young, petite women in rooms doing this. Isn't that much cooler than what the audience is expecting to see?
I think so, because it's different.
But do you find that's a television thing as opposed to a feature film thing. Where
no, no, it's the same. You are discriminated for your height. Well, you're not, but we are.
Yeah, yeah. They just don't. They don't see it. I'm 5 feet, 4'11".
No, but Brian, how tall? Brian,
5'10", 11 and a half.
In heels.
That's 6 feet, 5'8". What do you need me to be?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Whatever you need me to be. Exactly.
True story.
True story, for sure.
And there's such a thing as apple boxes. Like, I don't, I'm always on one anyway. So, and heels. I mean, my husband's 6'3". Like, what different? I've always dated like tall, tall guys. So I don't know. Tall guys like the little girls.
Yeah. Well, it's evolution. They hope that, you know, somewhere along the line, we're going to even it out.
Yes.
Get them
I told
taller.
My husband that's why I married him. He was genetically selected, so I have a shot at having at least average-sized children
there
between the
go.
Two of us. I hope.
Mm-hmm.
You have two kids?
I do. I have two boys. Yep.
I'm sorry. Like 4 and 5? They're young.
Three. Jagger, the baby, will be 4 in October. I can't even believe it. And Carter, my older one, will be 6 in January.
Wow.
That's amazing.
Started
great names.
Yeah, exactly. They're in kindergarten and preschool. And that's why I got out of LA, you know, a few months ago and moved to Texas. So I moved to Austin. So I've got,
Good for you.
They've got their bikes and they're in the dirt. My kid's out there with his, you know, the wheelbarrow and mulch and shovels. And we've got turkeys and deers and all kinds of boys.
That's fantastic. See, because when we were kids, it was like you had to be in LA or New York, and we don't have to do that anymore. And
yep.
This generation will have no idea, like the claustrophobia and the like, the desperation of just having to be in town. And if you missed an appointment or missed an audition, the guilt.
Oh, you know, I never went anywhere because every time I would book a vacation, it's like the old joke, right?
You get a job immediately.
Of course, book a vacation, you'll get a job.
Always.
Plan a trip, you'll get a job.
Always, every single time.
Oh, hold on, I'm on the Delta Airlines right now.
Let's go to Hawaii.
That's
when,
so funny.
When did you move to LA?
I moved to LA when I was I was from New York, so every other kid came for pilot season and then just never left. You know, I was 13.
And is that when you did Roseanne?
I did. So I did Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead.
Great movie.
Like the day I signed with Harry Gold, my agent at the time, I went that day to an audition because Jennifer Love Hewitt was cast, and so I'm so dating myself. She was cast, and they wouldn't let her out of her Kids Incorporated contract to do the movie. So, I know, right? Remember that show? Sure. Mario playing the drums, Mario Lopez. So I went in and got the job, and I started like 3 days later. So I stayed, and then I got, and then I did The Last Boy Scout like right after that, and then I just, you know, back when Movie of the Weeks were really popular, started doing a bunch of Movie of the Weeks, and I just never went back to New York. I never went back after that initial come out for pilot season and sign with your agent. I never, ever went back to the house that I had lived in. It's crazy.
Had there ever been a goal for you, like, oh, I want to do TV, I want to do movies? You had some great feature films that you're in that you just mentioned, and then some TV. Was there a direction you wanted to go, and it just... You know, it is what it is. You audition for what you audition for, or how did that happen?
I think
for
whoever
you?
Would hire me, you know, it's the typical like child actor supporting the family, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Like wherever the job comes, you've got to pay your rent and eat. So you'll just do it. And then it sort of found me. And then, you know, and then I had that difficult transition period where everybody was 85 pounds and, you know, that whole skinny girl thing and CW and WB and all that, like all the hot girls. And, you know, it was very, there wasn't a place, I couldn't find a place for me in television. I mean, I was told I was not WB material, whatever that means.
I was too. Don't worry. I was
thing.
Too.
Wait, was that, you were told that before you actually got Charmed?
I was told it the day I went to network for Charmed. They literally came out of their round table and was like, she just doesn't have the same star quality as Shannon does.
What the? What?
Yeah. And like, I mean.
Oh, that's nice.
The person who said it has since retracted statement, but still.
Are they still running the network?
No, a different one. A different one.
Wow.
But yeah. Brutal, just brutal.
I mean, I remember, I think back in the day, I wanted to be on a Fox show. Remember when Fox was like so risky and edgy?
You did an In Living Color.
That's when, because Fox started doing 24. Started doing 24, and it was such a different type of like TV making, you know.
And Married with Children, right? I mean, wasn't Married with Children sort of there? Like, that kind of opened that up Fox. That naughtiness. I know when I got a Fox
audition. Wasn't Melrose Place and 90210, those were all Fox, correct?
Yeah.
I believe so.
I think so.
Models, Inc.
Models, Inc.
I loved that show. Oh, my God.
The Simpsons, right? Wasn't The Simpsons
on Fox? NYPD Blue.
The Simpsons started Fox, yeah.
Yeah. So it was like, that's kind of, I think I just wanted to do edgier stuff.
Edgier fair.
And then... You know, and then just that weird, you know, period of trying to become an adult, I think, and, you know, that mid-20s sort of thing and not knowing. And then it was like, well, I wasn't really the pretty girl, but I wasn't like the character actor really per se. So I was sort of stuck in the middle of everything and cut my hair and, you know, probably I put on weight and was like, well, I guess I would rather live the life of the character actor because they're more fun anyway. And then be the lead, a storyline that is usually kind of boring. So, so played a lot of like goth girls and, you know, fun, edgy characters. And then I didn't know if I wanted to stay in it or not. I was still debating if I wanted to kind of be in the business and have that, you know, few years of, you need to lose weight if you want to keep working. And it's like, I think maybe I was like 115 pounds. I mean, maybe I was like a size 6 instead of a size 0. So I basically was like, F you, and I'm going to do what I want to do. And if you don't want to cast me, oh well. And was like selling, working at a beauty supply company and like doing up, you know, conventions, which was still like my bread and butter. Thank God for fans like supporting me through that time to be able to survive as an actor. And then Rob Zombie's Halloween came up, and it sort of, it just brought back, because I hadn't done horror movies in 20 years.
Wow.
So even though I was always sort of known as that kid, so it sort of brought back this new life. And then now I've embraced it with open arms, because I don't want to audition for TV anymore. I don't want to self-tape. I don't want to
Don't either. Isn't that weird? I can't do the self-tape. I don't
do
want
it.
To.
It's hard.
I'd rather get offers and do horror movies all day long and be considered like a movie star in their world and have this like cool community that I can live in forever and make more money doing that than anything I would ever do. I don't want to be a TV star on some series anymore. I just, it's like that ship has sailed, and I've found the brand, if you want to call it that. And
you definitely have it. And your brand is fantastic. And
thanks.
You become the horror gal, which is
it's
awesome.
So crazy, you know, and it's only really been the last, I don't know. I fought it for a while, you know, and with social media, I was like, I'm not, I can't do it. I can't do it. I don't want to do that. I don't want to show myself to everybody. And then I just sort of embraced it, and it opened up a whole world of stability in my life that I could now live, you know, live my life here in my beautiful home with my kids and be normal and just go to work, you know, 3 or 4 days on a movie and be okay to not have to work again for 6 months. And I still have my health insurance and, you know, all those things that you really appreciate when you're in your 40s.
Right.
That I didn't appreciate when I was younger and wanting to be a movie star or wanting to be, I never wanted to be a star. I just wanted stability financially. Mm. You know, when you go test for a show, you're like, okay, how many episodes, 20 episodes, one season, you know, whatever, 25 grand a week. Okay. So if I get it, I'm going to be okay until this year, you know, this year, how much are my bills? You know, you do the math and then you have 3 minutes in a room to make to figure out the rest of your life, your financial stability, which means your emotional stability and your family's stability. And it's a lot of pressure when you're, you know, 14 essentially, or 16, or really at any age.
You have, you know, 3 to 5 minutes to make or break the rest of your,
that's it.
The rest of the year or the rest of your life. Or, and like, people don't know that like suddenly you can be like living in New York and then you have to go and move your entire life to LA and do a show.
Yeah.
Like everything picks up and just goes wherever they tell you to.
Yeah. So
it's a lot, but it's funny how, you know, all this instability in the world kind of brought us more stability where we can like, you know, Brian loves to give out his address all the time, but Brian moved to Georgia, you know?
That was that we were going to look there next. We were going to look in Peachtree, but I came to Austin first. That's where I moved to. See,
stop
that was
telling
my second
people,
choice.
Brian.
Wow.
Well, there's only 20 Peachtrees in Georgia.
Okay, fair.
Because a lot of my friends from LA were, you know, like Zach lives there, Tyler Main lives there, like, you know, Greg Nicotero. Like, there was a lot of people that were like, but it felt, I didn't go there. Well, first of all, I hate that damn airport and I hate Atlanta airport. So I was like, how am I going to travel this
awful
freaking airport? It's the worst. Where my Austin airport's like fabulous. There's like, it's like better than Burbank. It's amazing.
It is. Oh, and it used to be smaller. And that's like the giant version of it. And it's still great.
Oh, it's so good. And I'm like in the middle of nowhere. So but Peachtree was my, because I knew people there. So that was my second choice. I just fell in love with this area I live in. And we just bought the house immediately. And then because things were going so fast. And then we sold our house after the fact. Thank God it sold. And we got out when we did.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Nice.
How do you like Georgia?
You don't have the humidity as much there as you do here.
Oh, I don't know. It's pretty nasty here.
Is it? It's still pretty bad, BK. It is.
Oh.
It's gross. But you know, I'm like, who cares? You just don't go outside. Just go in the pool, go in the lake, or stay in your air conditioning. You're not like, I'm outside hiking.
That's right. I'm an indoor kid now.
You know? Yeah, exactly. I'm like, I'm inside anyway. Who cares? I'll go to the movies.
So you say you have embraced the horror gal. You are, and I know, you know, anytime, and I've talked to other people trying to get horror movies made, they're like, well, can you get Danielle? And it's like, oh, it's almost a guarantee to get your movie funded.
I can get my own movies funded.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard it quite a few times. Is there a character that you like playing in this genre? What is it about the genre that you are drawn to?
I mean, I get to be the star. Really? Like I get the meaty roles and this, you know, the final girls, and I get to carry the movie, where if I was in an action movie or in another movie, unless I was, you know, famous, you don't really get that opportunity to carry a film like that. And it's, you know, it's fast and furious and it's made with love. I mean, there's positive and negatives. Like, the negatives are they're low budget. Nobody wants to give any money. You know, they're shot in like 10 days now and working these crazy hours, and you're fucking freezing somewhere. Got, you know, like we were half dressed and, you know, whatever. In some, you don't even know where you're going. You like meet the producers and your director. I always think about like, I getting in a car without knowing who I'm going to see, where I'm going. I'm just getting on a plane blindly. And I'm like, I could be going to like a serial killer's house. Like, I have no idea where I'm going.
Truly.
It's like, you know.
Isn't that funny? Like when you get picked up at the airport and there's just a person with your name, you're like, okay, I'll just go with you.
Yeah. And you get in the car. I mean, it could literally be a crazy person. I mean, Donna, hopefully, I mean, everyone I'm sure is going to hear this podcast because Big Charmed is. So don't get any ideas because I will shoot you. But
we have skills.
I will kill you. But I like the sort of being accessible and relatable and being able to just be normal, being the lead in a movie. Like, I don't have to be, you know, I can just be me and it's enough. And the amount of respect too, you know, because a lot of the producers and directors are not 10 times out of 10 were fanboys growing up watching me in these movies. So there's a cool sort of respect. And I also feel like I have a voice where when I'm a guest star on a show or I'm on a big movie, you know, like I did Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, I was on for a couple of weeks and I was like, I was just like hiding in my trailer because you just are scared, you know, even though I quit a friend of mine and it's just like, holy shit, I'm in this big movie. I don't want to say anything. I don't want to fuck it up. I don't want to get fired. You just want to be like, you're on your best behavior and be your best self. But so there's just something nice about the confidence, I think, that that I have when I walk onto a set of a horror movie in that world. I can own it where I'm not as confident in other areas. So that's why I've embraced it.
You have experience. It's your niche. It's your thing.
It's crazy. I talk about that with Scout all the time. Like it's easy. It's weird. And am I fucked up because it's so easy? Like, it's so easy for me to be crazy.
No, but I'll tell you, I'll tell you, I did one, speaking of auditions where like you don't care about getting the part and then you get it. This director actually hired me for the one horror movie that I did, because I always said you have to do one horror movie in your career for it to be a real career. He literally hired me because he was like, well, it seemed like you didn't care about my movie. And I was like, what? I was like, I had to go pick my stepfather up at the airport. That's all I said. Like, I couldn't stay to, like, meet with him again. I couldn't stay to meet with another producer that day. I was like, no, I'm already on tape. I've already met you. I gotta go.
And it's like dating.
Yes. And I was right? Like, no.
The guy's like, I want her because she's unattainable. She doesn't care. She's not returning my calls. I have to have her. And then the girl that's like, I'm here. I'm available. I'm showing up for you. They're like, who? I'm not interested. You know,
we were talking about this at the beginning of the pod.
It's about human nature.
With auditioning as well. The ones that you kind of don't really care about or you don't have enough time to prepare for are usually the ones you absolutely kill versus the ones that you're really excited and overly aggressive about, like learning your lines and studying and knowing it.
Overly enthusiastic.
Yeah, way too enthusiastic. Nobody wants that. They smell it a mile away and like, oh, they're not right for it.
No, dude, I would always learn my line, like go over my. I would get to the audition 30 minutes before my appointment time, and just finally open it up and start highlighting it in the car.
Whoa! Yeah.
Because I always look at it the night before.
Sure.
Print it out. You look at it, and you're like, okay, it's not that much. Okay, if it's meaty, I need to kind of break it down a little bit just to get it in my head before I go to sleep. But I never spent like tons of time, because you're right. When I would go to get coached or have some like, you know. Which is why Meisner worked for me when I was studying acting, because it was just, you know, in the moment. If I came into the room with a preconceived notion of what I wanted to do, it never worked out. Mm. It's like if you come in with an idea, it never works out the way you want it to. But if you just let it roll and let it happen, then it just feels so much better. But I think
exactly, and you respond authentically, truthfully in the moment,
100%. But you've got to really trust yourself. And totally. Usually when you have those big, big roles, you're scared and you don't trust that you're going to just like, you don't want to risk just like rolling with it when you walk in there, you sure. know? So it's a tricky little thing.
That's what makes it tough on the self-tape. You know, it's you've set it up, you know, now you get your person off camera. It feels, the energy to me is lost. You know, walking into a room and winning a room.
I actually really like the self-tape because, as we all know, actors have less than 0% of control or say. And so for the first time, for a self-tape, I treat it like it's a
job
on the day.
The control aspect.
Well, I like the control aspect, but you're in charge of what you get to send. And if I don't treat it now as an audition. I'm like, oh, okay, this is what I get to go work today, right? So
I can't even watch it. I actually go to a self-tape place. Because I want to come in, I book the like 10-minute session. I just read it once with them and then I just do it. And then they're like, do you want to watch? Do you want to pick? I was like, just send it. Because if I watch it, I'm never going to send it. I'm going to think about it. I don't care. I mean, but also my husband's not an actor. So to do it at home is like a nightmare. Because I spend more time telling him like, it's comedy. I need you to talk faster. Like, I don't understand. And then everyone's like, well, get your friend on Zoom. I'm like, I just don't want to bother anybody to do that. But I'm never going to get a job and then I started getting creative with the self-tapes of like, oh, I'm just going to act the scene out. I remember I was in Hawaii with my husband and we were on vacation. And I got this really important audition. And I was like, how do I get this to be cool and different? I was like, you know what? I'm going to actually film the scene. And I'm going to do it. I was playing crazy person. But I like tie my husband up and then I was supposed to like stab him. So I got him in his underwear in bed and like I filmed, I set up the tripod and I did the whole scene. And then I was like, had to stab him. And I was like doing it, you know? And he was like, oh, it's like, okay. Imagine I'm really stabbing you. Like, what would that sound like if I was actually stabbing you in your stomach with a knife? You've got to like give me something to work off of.
I've done.
Did you get the job?
No, I didn't get the job. Oh, it was from Dusk Till Dawn. I think it was the TV series. No, I didn't get the job. But I was like, they'll remember me. I'm in like my bra, tying up my husband in bed, filming it. They're gonna at least, you know.
Yeah, that's fucking awesome. That's rad. I like taking chances like that.
For and sure. That tape lives
nothing
somewhere.
To lose, right?
That tape lives somewhere.
Nothing to lose.
But I haven't gotten any of those jobs where I've like fully committed like that. It's really annoying.
Now you know.
Editing, being creative.
All the things.
Yeah, all the things. Let's not reward that. Let's go with the other person.
But I can't say that from doing the one horror movie I did, I know what's appealing about it is, for me, is you get to play all the emotional stuff, which we were good at as kid actors, and you get to play all this action stuff, and you can be a superhero, by the way, even if you're 5 foot nothing, and literally, like, and you can kill the bad guy.
Yeah.
Which you
can't. That doesn't happen in anything
else. We couldn't, like, really couldn't do that. I mean, we could do it in an alien movie. They just wouldn't let us.
Right.
Is the thing.
Exactly. Exactly. So it's, I mean, I'm like, why would I bother having to have any other career when I can just do this and be super happy?
Mm-hmm.
Works for me.
Right. So have you thought about getting on the other side, writing, producing, directing? Have you jumped into that foray?
I did. I've directed some shorts. And I directed a feature that Lionsgate picked up about a decade ago. You know, we had like no money and did it in 10 days. And I just put my actors through
everything.
You were
the one that started the 10 day schedule.
Yeah, I know.
Wow.
But I wasn't producing.
Okay.
So
brutal.
I learned never to do that again. And I also shot in order because we had like no changes of clothes and everybody was tied to a table. So it was like,
that's amazing though. That if you ever get a chance to shoot in sequential order, it's such an interesting, different experience.
I'd never had it happen. I'd never been on a set where I've been able to do it.
Like, it's like 1%. 1% you get to do it in order.
It was interesting to do it like that. But it's just a lot of dialogue. Everyone's just sitting around. So it's just so much and no rehearsal time. And, you know, it's just, it was not a super fun experience, but the movie was fine. Nothing, you know, great. But there's a movie that we've, Joe Dante, who, you know, Joe Dante directed Gremlins and Piranha and The Burbs and a bunch of stuff. And I did a movie with him. I did an episode of the show called Eerie Indiana that was actually not, it was around a little bit before your show, kind of a similar quirky, you know.
Yeah, it was a good show. I remember it.
It was good. I think it was a little before its time.
It was. Yeah. Justin Shankarov was on it, who played my little brother on Picket Fences.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
They were both kind of similar.
Yes, for sure. Yeah, and Omri Katz was the lead, and he was actually my first boyfriend in real life. Omri is
the dude from Hocus Pocus?
Yeah. Yes. We lost our virginity to each other. Anyway, so, and then I was on the show. It's so good, right? I was just in Salem last weekend. I love it.
Love that movie so much.
I got him into the convention circuit. I'm like, you're so dumb, dude. Why don't you do, like, people love that movie. They love you. You're
obsessed.
Like,
yeah.
So he's now immersed and loving every minute of it. So I'm happy. Good. So I did the movie. I did a movie with Joe that he produced a couple of years ago. And I'm all about being behind the camera and asking a million questions. And I much prefer to be behind the camera than in front of it. And anyway, so we decided we're going to do something together, and we kept having meetings, and I told him what I wanted to do. I wanted to do a female, you know, based final girl, sort of dark comedy horror. He optioned a script for me called Sequel, and we're just trying to get it made, you know, trying to find money for the last 2 years. So he just renewed the option, and hopefully I'll be able to attach as direct, you know, hopefully I'll be able to get it made, but I'm attached as director and producer.
Oh, fantastic.
And then now it's just sort of picking, you know, picking my girlfriends that are all final girls, essentially, are all horror actresses. And like, who do I cast?
Can I nominate Brian as one of your final girls?
Yes, of course.
He's definitely.
I'm just nominating, putting it out there, because he wouldn't do it. But later he go, man, I should have asked
him. I like amazing.
Oh, you know what?
I feel you as a final girl for sure.
I will cast you as a sheriff. You will play a cop.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
A cop.
Give him a badge.
Hey, you made his month.
Give him a badge.
Look at him. Look how happy he is.
I'm
going to
make it happen. Yeah,
you have a website, you have a podcast, you're kind of a branding machine in a way. I've seen you in a few shows. Tell us about the website, the podcast.
Yes. So danielleharris.com is the website. It's mostly just merch and like fun things. I always like trying to, you know, bring new things, create new things, photos and whatever.
Sorry to cut you off in your run, but what have you found merch-wise that people have really responded to?
You know, I actually do these calendars at the end of the year that are kind of fun. Like I make, like last year I did one that was like a play on different horror movies. So I did like The Shining and Texas Chainsaw, and like I just put myself in just like fun,
kind of like doing
stuff.
A Cindy Sherman thing where you're in each one.
Yes. I mean, it's just silly. I mean, honestly, you know, Patreon's been really cool for me. I started Patreon about a year ago, and I've got like my top tier, and we do, you know, it's sort of like what you guys do. We do like watch alongs where I'll watch movies that I've been in and sort of talk about the behind the scenes stuff. And oh God, look, there's my mic pack, or, you know, like, oh God, that blood's so, so brown. It's been on there since, you know, 5 a.m. like that kind of fun stuff, which they really like and have created an awesome little community. And now they're all friends. Obviously our podcast has been so fun, and I grew up with Love Lines, and I sort of wanted something like that, and I didn't want it to be just about horror movies because I don't watch enough of them to be able to talk about them, other than the ones that I'm in essentially and the ones that my friends are in. So so I started doing that, and that's Talk Scary to Me, and that is on where podcasts can be found, you know, Apple and Spotify. We are at episode 46, I think, something like that, and we're bringing on guests and finding all their stuff. And we're doing lives now at conventions here and there, where people can, you know, bring you guys on stage and get to talk about fun stuff and, you know, giveaways and, you know, all that fun stuff. And so I'm Horror Gal on Instagram and Halloween Gal on Twitter. And then I've got Facebook and all that stuff. But Instagram is kind of my most active, or Patreon. And then Patreon, we have Patreon for podcasts where they watch the video. That's always fun to see Scout and I being stupid together.
And do you have a schedule up for fans that want to meet you at conventions? What do you have coming forward?
That's a good question. Let me get my phone and I will tell you. I'm appearing in Alabama at have you ever done Atrox? Atrox is like a haunted house.
No.
Super fun. But they're the first weekend of October, San Antonio, the 14th and 15th of October, For the Love of Horror in the UK, October 22nd and 23rd, Niagara Falls, Halloween weekend. Going to take some people on a tour in Louisville at Waverly, the beginning of November. Monster Mania is obviously one of my faves. I think I've been to about 40 or 46 of them. Oh. And I've seen you guys at a bunch of those. That's November 11th through 13th. And then Days of the Dead, Chicago. To November 18th through the 20th. Well, and then I'm going to go on vacation, hopefully.
Yeah. It sounds like you're going to need one. That's a lot.
I think so.
No kidding.
Danielle, thank you so much for rolling by and talking with us today. It's been such a pleasure, and you killed it as Aviva. Really enjoyed you,
thank you
in the
much.
Episode. It was a lot of fun to watch.
Aviva.
She was sleepwalking.
Even though I slept walk through it, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
thanks, guys. Congrats on your podcast. I will tell everybody.
Thank you so much.
You guys be a guest on our show one day.
Oh, yeah. They're coming.
They're coming. I'm coming for you, boys.
Get your question right.
Whatever you want. I will answer anything.
Open book.
Yeah. Ooh. Maybe listen to our podcast before you say that.
Yeah,
I know. That's a...
Yeah.
Oh, do you
like... I just won't tell my parents. Like, but everything else is
fine. No, don't. My mom listens. I'm mortified.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
She says she turns it off before I start talking about anal, but, you know, anyway.
That's amazing.
All right, guys. Have a great day.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Danielle.
Bye, everybody. Thank you, Danielle.
Bye. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Danielle Harris.
Fantastic. Wow. So much energy.
It's so much energy, so much. I'm going to unpack that for days. HMC, BK, I need final verdict on the app. Where are we at with it? Out of 10.
Well, I want to start by saying Danielle is lovely, and she was an asset in this episode for sure, especially knowing that she was sleepless now. She did a fantastic job. But I still feel like it's like one of the fledgling charmed ugly duckling episodes where we just didn't know what we were doing quite yet 100%. Mm. So I feel the internal struggle, but it is better. So I'm saying
6.57. Okay.
Wow.
Was that on the high end?
No.
No.
What do you mean?
The problem is anyone
like
looks
low
at
it. Like,
on a
scale
forgot.
Of 1 to 10, though, if you do 5 and below, everyone just kind of groups 5 to 1 as the same thing.
Wait, but I forgot. Like that, it's basically like Brian's first full episode, so then I have to like bump it up to an 8.
Yeah. It wasn't great. Like I said before, I don't know why they brought me back. But, you know, I thought the episode was definitely 7.5, 8 as far as entertainment value, storyline. I understand I wasn't a regular show. I didn't have as much invested of finding yourself. But right. for me as an audience member, it would have brought me back the next week. And I, okay. you know, I just found Fair. Enough in there that well, it's like, okay, entertainment value, I'm almost at an 8.
Maybe okay. your glutes. Brought some people back. So I'll give you a
finest
9.
Glutes. Finest glutes in all the
I'll
land,
give you,
baby.
I'll give you a 9 on the...
All the land.
All the land.
Yeah, all the land. Ugh. I'll give you a 9 on all the land. okay. All right.
Okay.
Dead nice. Man Dating, still hanging tough at the top.
Yeah, no, if we're doing a season one ranking, power rankings, Dead Man Dating is like...
Taking
runaway.
The prize.
So far. In the
runaway top. Winner. That and number in episode one so far.
All right.
So well, I thought Danielle was awesome.
Yeah, she was really great, really insightful, so cool, so yeah. confident. And like, I love that she has taken ownership of who she is, what she likes and what she loves and what she's really good at. And
yep.
is unapologetic about it at all, which is amazing. I like that self-assuredness.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it's really cool.
And that's very where inspiring. I thought she was kind of one of the fourth sisters.
And right? she played I mean, that. Her yeah. personality now, definitely you can see that in Aviva 100%.
Right.
100%.
She's a little
like,
badass.
By the way, not that you guys asked me, but I like the episode. Thank you. But I, give like
I
a
was
7.
Trying to. You just kept talking.
Oh, please.
Drew.
Did I?
Give yeah. me your rating.
No, you don't care about
one
my
to
rating.
1 to 10. I do. Because no. you're the fresh eyes. You're the newbie. This is all new to you. So, oh no. So you're thinking way too
7.
Long now.
I give it a 7.
See?
So I actually split you and Brian. I think it had right. more potential. I liked her a lot. I totally bought everything. Bide. I totally bought everything that was happening in the episode. I still think it could have been, you know.
So.
It could have been better. Just a little bit. But I enjoyed it. And like Brian, I think 100%. Seeing that episode, I would definitely tune in next week.
For Dale.
For Dale. The well, just, I mean, like the girl, I kind of like the
you
cattiness
see who
between
wins.
You and Phoebe.
You want to see who wins Dale's glutes.
Yeah. Well, I just want right. to know how it gets resolved, how you ultimately choose Piper over Phoebe.
Ultimately.
Well, you'll have to stay tuned.
I'm going
to
stay
tuned.
It's a
complicated story. Yeah.
Check out
so with that being said, guys, thank you so
journey.
Much for listening and checking out our podcast. You can download it and wherever you listen to podcasts, whether it's Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Google, iHeart, all the places, all the things. And
all
if you want to watch us, go ahead and check out our Patreon at patreon.com/thehouseofhallowell. And yeah, that's pretty much
see
it.
See you
that's
later.
Got.
See yeah, you next week.
Do
see
it next,
next
yeah,
week.
We'll see you next week.
Be good, kids.
Oh, more glutes.
Yeah.
Leo's don't light glutes. Any black candles.
If you want to tune in for more frosted tips, tune
and
in
black to candles. Next week as Leo's glutes and tips are
oh.
on full display.
Your, now on full display, Daniel's touching show. Your screen.